Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the CIMC Music Show. I'm your host, Jason Cuban, and today in our news, the folks over at Spot-A-Cop need your help. The first story comes to us about a house fire that occurred on August 5th around 3:30 a.m. Authorities need your help in locating information of the whereabouts or names of suspects that may have been responsible for the house that destroyed all the belongings in the home and the family's pet cat. It happened on August 5th around 3:30 a.m. on Thoroughfare Road, and the fire was deliberately set, according to the family and according to the fire marshal, that it appeared that somebody had opened the front door and tossed in an object that ignited the room on fire, which led to the overall house being burned down. Apparently, an accelerant, most likely gasoline, was used, and the heaviest concentrations were in the bedrooms of the children. Now, it's also reported that the neighbors heard some loud bangs when they were asleep, and when they awoke, they saw the house was in flames and called 911. They said they were laying down sleeping when they heard the loud bang and went outside and saw the house in flames. The firefighters put it out before hurt any of their family dogs that were in a cage around back, but everything else in the house was completely destroyed. The fire marshal said that the way it looked, it was like somebody had opened the front door and threw something inside, and they know that gas was used as an accelerant. They had a few people tell them being the owners, that somebody was around their home between the hours of 2:30 and 3 a.m., and a car was seen and heard driving back down from the road at high rate of speed. A few minutes later, they heard the fire trucks coming, and also mentions that two younger guys were heard talking pretty loud around the same time that car was heard going down the road. So they're looking for any information, and there is a $200 reward for information leading to an arrest. However, the family has lost everything and is currently stranded without a home, so we are seeking donations in either the form of monetary or in material goods, anything that you might be able to help the family out with. The address that you can send your donations to would be 2123 Dovel Hollow Road. That's Dovel, D-O-V-E-L, Hollow, H-O-L-L-O-W, Road in Stanley. Next, we bring you a story about a motorcycle that was stolen. The motorcycle was stolen from the Clover Hill, Dayton area on Union Spring Road. It was stolen the night of October 4th or sometime within the day of October 5th while the family was either at work or asleep. And it was said to be a CR100 four-stroke 2003 Honda. The colors are white and red with a black seat. So it's overall red with a small white trim on it and black seat. If you have any information leading to that, you can direct that to, we have an email address here, which is zoelane33@gmail.com. That is zoelane33@gmail.com. And lastly, another report comes in about a stolen speaker set out of the back of a vehicle. It appears to be a kicker box with two speakers in it and an amplifier as well. So they're looking for information about that, and you can contact Heather Nicole Ball. That's Heather, common spelling, and Nicole is spelled N-I-C-O-L-E. Ball, B-A-L-L, and that's the name you search on Facebook for. So if you have any information about that, please give them a call. If you have any information or you have a story that you would like aired on the show, if something's been stolen, if you're missing a family member, anything like that, go over to Spot-A-Cop's Community Alert and post your story there, and they'll get it into us, and we'll go ahead and get that played on the show, and hopefully we'll help you find a solution to your problems. Spot-A-Cop is on Facebook, and you can search out Spot-A-Cop, but use dashes in between the Spot, A, and Cop. So another way you can do that is if you are not in the Western Virginia area, that's Page County, Augusta County, Shenandoah County, and Rockingham County. I think that's all that they cover. But yeah, if you're not in any of those areas, Spot a Cop can still help you. There are several different chapters in Virginia, Pennsylvania, Washington, D.C., New York, Arkansas, and Maryland, as well as New York. Go onto their website, that's spotacop.net46.net, and click on the chapters button, and you can locate the Spot a Cop chapter for your area.
All right, I apologize for that. Looks like we had a little bit of communication there, a little communication problems. So we're getting ready to speak with Heather Lamb. If I can get Heather to call back in, we're talking with her real quick about the fire that we just mentioned on the news portion of the show there. Let me see if I can't get her to get with us, because it's a pretty sad story. Their cat apparently was trapped in the bathroom by the arsons who started the fire, and they unfortunately lost their cat. So let me see if I can't get her to call back in, because I want to hear more about this, and we want to see what we can do about helping the family out. And we also have with us today Stoney Shiflett is back, and J.R. Roberts are also back to help us pick up on the We Are the People Part 2 show. As you may recall, 2 days ago we had an episode on We Are the People, and they had an excellent show. We covered a lot of very serious topics, and so we're going to pick up today where we left off. But first, let's go over with Heather, and we'll talk with Heather a little bit about this fire. Heather, are you with us?
Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you tell us a little bit about more about this fire and what happened? Heather, can you hear me?
Sorry, I can barely hear you. My phone is messed up.
Oh, no problem. I was just asking if you could tell my listeners a little bit more about the fire, any details that might help us identify who may have done it, and how we can go about getting some donations over to help your family.
My house got burnt down on August 5th around 3:30 in the morning. I got a call from my aunt around 4 or 4:30 that morning telling me that my mom's house had burnt down. It was me, my mom, my little brother and sister and cousin who all lived there. And the firefighters got the fire out before it was able to spread anywhere or get our dogs that we had in the pen around back. But our entire house was completely destroyed. And whoever did it also went into the house before they caught fire to it and trapped my cat in the bathroom so she couldn't get out. So they burned her alive too, and also my cousin's little pet turtle.
Oh, that's horrible.
The firefighters,
so your dogs
said
were
gas
okay though, right?
Was used to, as the accelerant, and that most of it was poured back in my little brother and sister's room and out through the hallway. But we have nothing left now. But all we really want is for the people who did it to pay for it.
Right. Now, do you have any information that would help
the
listener?
We've had people tell us that they've seen a car there in our driveway that morning around 3, and then a few minutes later heard it like pull away as fast as it could, and then they heard sirens. Our neighbors
now, do you know what color car?
911.
Do you know what color car it was? Or
about it.
Okay. Did you know what color car or what make it was? Heather. Oh, looks like we lost Heather there. Let me just go ahead and pick up where she was leaving off. She had mentioned that there was a car. We don't know what the type of car was that was seen at the house, but I do just want to point out once more that they are looking for those people responsible, and she's going to try to call us right back again and see if we can't get a better connection here. I'd like to hear more about this vehicle and the make and model of it, because that might help us out, try to track down who was responsible. So let's hope that she can call back here real quick. In the meantime, let me tell you how you can, let me let you know how you can send your donations in. There is an address here that you can send. It's either cash donation or you can even send material donations. And the address is 2123 Doval Hollow Road, and that's in Stanley, Virginia. Now, I'm not sure of the zip code for Stanley, Virginia, but I'm pretty sure that's not too hard to figure out. Again, that is 2123 Doval Hollow Road. That's spelled D-O-V-E-L, Hollow, H-O-L-L-O-W. It's Doval Hollow Road in Stanley, Virginia. So our heart goes out to you, Heather, and your family, and you know, we hope that people from Spotacop can help you out, and hopefully our listeners might be able to help shed some light on it. But you know, we're pulling for you, and we wish your family the best of luck. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and move on to the next part of the show. I do have one word from one of our sponsors here, and then we're going to introduce our next two guests here on the show, which you will recall from last week. So let's go ahead and pay the bill real quick, and then we'll meet you right back here on CIMC Music Show.
We are the Borg. Resistance is futile. When traversing the universe, we always be sure to check Spotacop to make sure the Federation isn't out there seeking to stop us from assimilating you. Spotacop on Facebook.
Welcome back to We the People, which is part two of our two-part segment where we are taking on governmental issues, things that affect our country. These issues are not easy to confront, and so with that being said, I'd like to bring back my two guests from the last episode. This first guest is an activist from Harrisonburg, or from the area here in Shenandoah Valley, J.R. Roberts, who is a boots-on-the-ground type of person who's been putting in a lot of work lately, trying to raise awareness about several different issues that affect us. So JR joins us today, and he's going to help us debate some of these topics. JR, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good tonight. How are you, Jason?
I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for coming back again. Looking forward to hearing from you. Let me just bring Stoney in here. Stoney's our next guest. And Stoney, he's also from Harrisonburg, and he was also on the show last episode. And he and JR seem to have met eye to eye on several of these issues, but they also they see eye to eye on some of the issues, but they also have different points of views on some of the other ones. Now, Stoney is an all-around American guy who has a lot of heart for his country, and he, you know, his opinions are sound and strong, so I would like to welcome him back. Stoney, how are you this evening?
Hey, doing good, bud. Can you guys hear me good?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine. How about you, JR?
Yeah, I can hear him.
Just a little bit tired than the last episode, but I'll see if I can make it. First of all, I just want to say a quick shout-out to your mom, Janet. Hope you're listening. I'd love to hear from you sometime. Maybe we could talk. She's an old former employee with me. Worked a woman together in Jason's mom. Real awesome girl. Happy.
Okay, well, I'm glad to hear that. Now, guys, we had talked last time, and we ran out of time, and you guys were hitting on a really good topic. And I just, if you don't mind, I'd like to bring it back around to that again. The point or the topic that was raised was based on the war of drugs, or as I like to call it, the failed war on drugs. And I had made the comment that I felt our police were enforcing arbitrary, unjust laws. And one of the things that I had mentioned was that I felt that the laws about marijuana were unjust, and I felt that there was no need for that particular crime to exist as far as, you know, the definition they have of possessing a plant. Now, I understand when we had signed off beforehand, Stoney, you were mentioning that you felt that it was, in fact, a gateway drug. Do you mind picking back up from there?
Sure, no problem at all. A few things. I looked at the stats tonight, and it is kind of shocking how much we've spent on the war on drugs. It's kind of been a big failure. We're talking $1 trillion, and it has been ridiculous. And I kind of, you know, if I see, once again, it's the issue where I see both sides. I think I take more of a personal vision toward it, as in, you know, when it comes down to marijuana, I don't believe it should be legalized. First of all, it's extremely addictive. There's actually been people I know that's done cocaine and marijuana and an alcohol assault at once, and the worst thing they get rid of, the worst addiction was the cannabis. And, I mean, you know, Amsterdam, you know, is a famous place across the world that has, you know, they've legalized pot. And if you actually look into it, though, has it really helped? The citizens now, you know, are along with the children are increasingly getting, you know, parts of it, you know, through schools and stuff. And their children, you know, is being exposed to it. So, that, you know, I see the arguments on the other side, too. So I think the effects of marijuana and what it does to them, you know, it comes down to basically, it's terrible for your mental health. I think most people say they compare it to other drugs and basically say, hey, it's not crack or it's not, you know, meth, which is true. But you're lying to yourself if you think it doesn't harm. But I also see the point in legalizing it as well, as far as taxing it and stuff. And if we had an honest government, I wouldn't be too far away from it. But if it comes down to my vote, I wouldn't legalize it. But, you know, I don't think we trust our government to actually legalize it and tax it correctly. And, it, you know, you could use the money to put toward, you know, whatever you want. But I just don't trust the government enough to do that.
Okay, well, that makes sense. Now, when we were talking last, JR wanted to have a rebuttal there for you, and unfortunately we had to cut him off. So, JR, let me give you the opportunity to offer your insight there.
Sure. As far as the claim that marijuana is addictive, it's not the substance that is addictive. It's the behavioral traits within the individuals that become addicted to a substance, just like certain people become addicted to shopping or people become addicted to playing video games and things like that. It's addictive in a nature that it's enjoyable, and you want to do something that's enjoyable repetitively. You said the people that found it hard to curb their intake of cannabis also drank a lot and did cocaine. So I think you're excluding those variables when you're trying to say that cannabis is what's addictive. And as far as one of the other points, you said that it's affecting the children of Amsterdam. I wrote an article for a Facebook page that I run. I admin, along with a couple of my friends, for legalized marijuana in Virginia. And I wanted to look at some towns in Colorado that were the same size as Harrisonburg to try and gauge how it would affect a town of our size. Because a lot of times you look at statistics and it's statewide statistics for large cities like Denver. And those sort of cultures and areas are going to be different than Harrisonburg. So I looked at two cities that were the same size. Broomfield, Colorado has 56,000 people, and Castle Rock, Colorado has 48,000 people. And I think the population of Harrisonburg hovers somewhere within the 50s, right?
Okay.
And as far as how it affected their kids, the high school dropout rate in Broomfield was 0.3%. compared to the statewide average of 2.3%. And if you look at high school graduation rates from, well, first of all, as a timestamp,
recreational marijuana became legal in Colorado in early 2014. If you look at the high school graduation rates of 2012 and 2013 and compare them to 2014 and the progress of students in 2015, there is no major decline. There is no sudden spike in high school dropouts. There is no sudden decline in student performance. There's high schools in these areas that are ranking in the top 500 high schools in the nation. Now, obviously, I'm not saying, oh, these kids smoked marijuana and it made them smarter. But it doesn't show that decline that some people say they're going to see.
I disagree a little bit. I just seen a study where they was doing, I should have saved it, actually. So they did a poll on 129 college kids that smoked marijuana. A half an hour outside the survey, they were 85% of them had lower grades than that as point where they did before. I wish I would have saved that study, but I did. But earlier I was looking at. It comes down to opinion, but to say it doesn't affect your brain in any way, several studies have proved that. But I guess it depends on how much you do. I get a lot of my friends that do marijuana. They say they're not addicted to it, but every time I visit them, man, they're pulling out there. And I'm like, wow. I mean, I'm addicted to stuff too, man. Don't get me wrong. I do understand the point. That's a good point. Can you hear me a little bit clearer there, Jason?
Yeah, you break up a little bit here and there, but we can hear you for the most part. Let me interject a thought here. First of all, just to touch base on JR, you mentioned the populace of Harrisonburg. As of 2014, the estimate was 52,478 people. So, yeah, you're right in the ballpark. That's a good comparison. But what I want to interject here is two things. First of all, I don't know either one of you, if y'all smoked marijuana or weed or anything, but, you know, I had my fair share of marijuana, and I've had my good days, my bad days. And as far as the addiction part of it is, I'd say I wasn't so much addicted to it that I needed to have it as that I wanted to have it. I enjoyed the way it made me feel. I loved the fact that it helped me reduce stress. Things didn't bother me as much. You know, people that would usually annoy the crap out of me, you know, I could tolerate better. But it goes on to say that I don't feel that I was addicted. The hardest thing I had to quit was smoking with cigarettes, or, you know, anything I had to quit. The hardest thing was cigarettes. But with marijuana, I think I have to go with JR on this side of the fence, because number one, it made me want to work more and earn more money and produce better at work, so I could, you know, afford to be able to buy my weed at the end of the week. And when I smoked, I was able to concentrate better. I would work harder. I would work steadier. I would have less, you know, errors in my performance. And for a long time, I think it was a blessing for me and my productivity. But on the other side of the fence towards where Stoney's at, I have to say, yeah, I do see that there are some mental fallbacks for smoking, especially if you were a chronic smoker like I was. For example, I was a whiz with my left and my right until the first time I smoked marijuana. And to this day, I still get them mixed up. That's bad to say. But I consider myself to be an intellectual. I mean, I'm a computer technician, and I do a lot of things, like, well, for example, the spot a cop thing. You know, I'm an activist like JR is. I do a lot of debating. I mean, me and Stoney, we debate all the time. So I have to say that I can see both sides of the fence. But in my opinion, it's just I don't feel that the marijuana issue should be in the same basket as, say, the harder drugs.
Let me take a quick scare. I'm sorry, Josh. I'm taking up more time.
No, you're fine.
I'll give it yours. Let me take a different approach. I guess what I'm trying to say is, and I don't know how you guys feel about this, but what's next? Yeah, I feel it's like, if once we do this, okay, let's pass it, blah, blah, blah. And I see, you know, the goodness of passing it. I see that. But I'm almost afraid to say what's next.
Well, I hope what's next is that they'll ban a lot of these pharmaceuticals. I mean, the pharmaceutical companies aren't creating treatments and cures. They're creating, you know, patients and clients and customers. And I think JR may have made mention of that at one point in our discussions online. But the next thing that's be legalized, I don't know. I mean, they legalized alcohol, which paves the road for a lot of other stuff. In my opinion, I think the American population is going to agree. We really don't need to have methamphetamine and crack running rampant on our streets. But JR mentioned during the last session that it seems like the war on drugs is more about telling an adult what they can and can't do with their own body. And while I agree that that shouldn't be an issue, I do think that some of us aren't making very smart decisions, and that rule should be fine until your actions start affecting those around you. JR, I mean, what do you think?
Well, I want to take a quick second to clarify what we mean by addiction. A lot of that word is thrown around very loosely, and I don't think people fully understand what it means. When you say you are addicted to something, it means you physically cannot stop because your body physically needs that substance, such as when you become addicted to crack or you become addicted to meth. If you stop taking it, your body has a reaction because it's no longer receiving that substance. That does not happen with cannabis. You might have people like, oh, man, I wish I was high right now, but that's the end of the addiction. Even cigarettes has a stronger addiction pull than cannabis does. And I wanted to touch base on something that we talked about last episode. Stoney, you agreed with me on the position of prohibition does not work for guns, because what that does is it takes the guns out of the hands of people that could use them responsibly, but it doesn't do anything to take them out of the hands of people that will use them irresponsibly. The prohibition of cannabis is the exact same concept. If you make it illegal or you make it you prohibit the substance of cannabis, you're going to be keeping it out of the hands of the people that are going to use it responsibly, smoke in their basement and eat some Doritos, and it's going to stay in the hands of people that might use it in a manner that isn't proper, such as selling it for a profit or other things. But even regardless, those behaviors aren't necessarily right or wrong if no one's being hurt and everyone in the transaction consents. But one of your questions was, what happens next if we legalize cannabis? And some of the arguments that I've heard is we'll have a lot of doped-up drivers. We'll have and I looked into this. I looked into what happens in the areas that legalize cannabis, what happens to their drivers. And there was a study from Healthy Kids Colorado that polled high school kids. And this data is from let me make sure I get this right. This data is from 2013 when medicinal cannabis was made available. Medicinal cannabis was made available in Colorado in 2011, the early double digits. But anyway, this data is from 2013 of high school students in Colorado. And within all of these numbers are going to be from within the last 30 days. So students had driven with someone in a car that had drank alcohol, 17.9% of those students had. They had driven themselves under the influence of alcohol, the 7.7 of high school students had. So if you bring that total together and compensate for some overlap, almost a quarter of high school students in Colorado had been in a car where someone driving had been drinking. And if you compare that to those same students asked if they had driven under the influence of THC or cannabis, only 10.9% of kids had driven cars under that influence. So even with the implementation of medicinal marijuana, more kids are still driving under the influence of alcohol than THC. And to go furthermore with that, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, the NHTSA, did a study out of Virginia Beach where 3,000 drivers who were involved in crashes during a 20-month period in Virginia Beach, Virginia, plus 6,000 controls who drove in the same area during the same period but did not get into accidents. There was a study done with these people to see how cannabis or marijuana affected their driving ability, and this is what they had to say after they looked over the data. This analysis shows that the significant increased risk or crash involvement associated with THC and illegal drugs is not found after adjusting for these demographic variables.
This finding suggests that these demographic variables may have co-varied with drug use and accounted for most of the increased crash risk. For example, if the THC-positive drivers were predominantly young males, their apparent crash risk may have been related to age and gender rather than use of THC. It's the idea of the stereotype that, oh, Asians are bad drivers, but you're going to blame it on cannabis instead of the fact that they're stereotypically bad drivers. And that sort of behavior is also relevant with the idea that cannabis is addictive. Those people becoming addicted to cannabis isn't necessarily the substance, but rather other variables that aren't taken account for.
All right, now let me interject something here, too, before I go over to Stoney there. Just a few more statistics that I'd like to put out there, and then, yeah, Stoney, I definitely want to hear your response. These statistics are the fatalities. This is from the drugwarfacts.org, and this is causes of death. Now, the reason why I want to read these off is because I think, well, it's going to explain itself here in a second, but I think it's important to point out, let me just read them off. I think that'll do it enough justice. Alcohol-induced deaths in America for 2013 were estimated at, 29,001. That's a hell of an estimate. Okay, now pharmaceutical deaths due to solids and liquids, 18,579. That's more than they have homicide at 16,121. But here's the kicker. 17,000, it says by the second power, but anyway, of all illicit, those are the death totals of all illicit drugs combined. However, cannabis has a death toll of zero. Let me go ahead and kick it over to you, Stoney.
Okay, stats. I get it. I can all look it up, but I bet you guys can't tell me one person, and I mean, be honest about this, one person that started on marijuana or any other alcohol, tobacco. There's not one I can name. Everybody I know started with something. That's why, you know, when we say addiction, I believe it's a gateway to addiction. As a matter of fact, I don't know anybody that's done cocaine. I can't name one person. I mean, I know people that's done cocaine. They didn't start there. They started down the road with something like that. It went through the process that led them there. But back to I want to address Josh on one thing. He's saying that cigarettes wasn't as toxic, whatever, or marijuana wasn't as toxic as cigarettes. I've seen several studies done on that. It's actually more toxic than cigarettes. Regular users that use marijuana have lung problems 20 years earlier than people that smoke. And I remember one doctor telling me one time, he said it's like if you do one marijuana joint, it's like doing four cigarettes. It also increases the risk of leukemia in children. That's about a parent cigarette. Study that showed that. So go ahead.
I agree with you there about that. Me being a marijuana smoker, you're right. Marijuana smoke produces a hell of a lot more tar than cigarettes. I agree with you there. But the gateway thing, I got to be honest, that was. I agree. Okay, it's a gateway drug, but it was the gate that led out from drug addiction for me. I started on LSD and mushrooms and ended my drug campaign in life through marijuana. So for me, it was the opposite. So there's when you said you couldn't pick one person, I am a testimony of that. Doesn't mean that that's the way it is across the board.
But you
didn't start with
marijuana.
We've got to take a quick break real quick. No, I didn't start with marijuana. Let's take a quick break here. I got to throw another ad up real quick, and then we'll meet back here and continue the discussion. Thank you so much, guys, for being on the show with us today. All right, so let's go ahead and hear a word from our sponsors here, and then we'll get right back to it.
Comstar Computers is a proud sponsor of the CIMC Show, and this week they are offering a special sale on tablets, Android tablets 7 inches, starting out at just $50, and they also have iRulu smartwatches that start out at $40. So go to www.comstarcomputers.com and click on the online store link on their webpage, and you'll be taken to their inventory where you can see all the different types of tech gadgets they have for sale, ranging from tablets and smartphones to smartwatches and storage devices and even computer accessories. So check them out at www.comstarcomputers.com.
and welcome back to the CIMC Music Show. If you're just joining us, we are doing our second part in our two-part series, We the People. And with us today are returning guests Stoney Shiflett and J.R. Roberts. J.R. Roberts is an activist from the area who, as I said before, is a boots-on-the-ground kind of guy doing hard work and heavy research, spreading public awareness. Stoney Shiflett is your all-around American. He loves the country. He's a well-rounded individual, a Christian, and he's got a lot of good points, and we appreciate having them both to the show. We are wrapping up on our first topic, which is the war on drugs. I just want to go back to you guys and let you add your finishing thoughts on this particular topic. I think we left off with Stoney, so if you want to pick it up, Stoney, go right ahead.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, man. I appreciate the debate, Josh. It's pretty cool. You know, there's one thing that I've learned in debating politics and religion and all that, things that I've learned in my life, and it's don't be afraid to be wrong. Because when you do that, you think, and you've got the answer, I think, when you're, and I've learned, I just didn't, you know, say that one day. I learned through experience. Don't be afraid to be
Can
wrong.
You repeat what you said? Because it broke up a little bit.
Okay, one thing, is that better?
Yeah, much better.
Okay, one thing that I've always said, that I will always say, and I think it's the most important part of learning, is don't be afraid to be wrong. I used to be that guy that I'm right about everything, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I got proved wrong a couple times, and it makes you question it. The whole marijuana thing, like I say, I don't really care enough about it to really vote for it or against it. But when it comes down to it, I look at the kids more than anything. So I take it a little bit more. I care about the people that are doing it. There's a reason they're doing it. But like me, you know, hey, I'm overweight. I love my pizzas. you know, but there's inside. There's a reason that we've got addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me, more than anything, I think that's the standpoint I take from it. I do see the people that like, look. I don't want the government telling me what to do with my life and everything. And I agree with that. Because if you go too far with that, that's going to be a problem. But the bottom line is to finish it off, man. I don't agree with
it. Okay. Well, you know, and I like what you said about, you know, don't be afraid to be wrong. And you're absolutely right. JR is living proof that I can be proven wrong. And I know he and I have had our many a debates as well. I mean, like you and I do, Stoney. I mean, you and I are on different sides of the fence on some issues, but, you know, like you and I, he and I can argue our points, and it's clean, you know what I mean? It's very productive. JR, what do you have to say in closing about the war on drugs?
I think that the idea of comparing, I want to touch base on one last point here. The idea of claiming that cannabis is a gateway drug because people that used it then in the future used methamphetamine is an entirely subjective argument, meaning that it's based on opinion and emotion rather than facts. Because I could easily say everyone that I know that smoked meth drank milk before they started smoking meth, and that has nothing to do with smoking meth, same as I know people that smoked meth that didn't drink milk. And real quick, I wanted to also touch base on this. There was a study released by a peer-reviewed organization, the Journal of School Health, about seeing which drug out of cannabis, tobacco, and alcohol would be the larger source of a gateway, so to speak. And they're quoted in saying, the findings from this investigation support that alcohol should receive primary attention in school-based substance abuse prevention programming, as the use of other substances could be impacted by delaying or preventing alcohol use. Therefore, it seems prudent for school and public health officials to focus prevention efforts, policies, and monies on addressing adolescent alcohol use. And I do agree, just to cover what Stoney said about government actions, the government's responsibility is to protect us from each other. And when they start to overstep their boundaries and try and protect us from ourselves, that's when there's a problem. And the idea of not caring too much about the topic either way, whether you wouldn't necessarily go out and vote for it, silence is defending the status quo. If you don't say anything about legalizing marijuana, then you are allowing the government to cage human beings in warehouses because they smoked a plant in their basement. And I think that that's a deplorable action and isn't necessarily a proper viewpoint, in my opinion.
All right, man. You know, both you guys have raised some really strong points here. And I think what I'm taking away from this, and I'm only speaking for myself, I can't speak on behalf of everybody else, it's that there's still a lot of misconceptions and confusion as to what we're being taught about drug abuse, marijuana specifically, its overall usage and implications. I know that in school we are taught one thing, and then as we get older, some of us experiment on our own and find that their class isn't exactly 100% forthcoming and truthful. And it leads me to my final thought, and that's that we do not need to leave this sort of thing in the hands of the government, because the government, who makes money off of the sale of tobacco and alcohol and even pharmaceutical medications, are making money off of things that are costing people their health and their lives. And then they want to turn around and tell you that, you know, they're making these laws to protect you. And we have, for example, the marijuana being responsible for absolutely zero deaths, but yet has a lot going for it. So in the end, it comes down to the people. It comes down to knowing facts for yourself, doing your own research, whether it be hands-on or third party, at least be in the know. And with that, it's time to go on to our next topic, and we're going to take a quick poetic break here, just 1 minute. It's to let you guys hear about a new dietary supplement by Dr. Fierro. I'm going to play that ad here just for a second, and then we're going to address the next topic, which is the rise of the police state.
It's that time of year again when the winter months are upon us, and with that comes colds and flus, and we have just the answer for you to keep you above weather. Dr. Arthur Fierro of Harrisonburg, Virginia, who is a nationally accredited nutritionalist and chiropractor. He's the inventor of the dietary supplement BioDefense. BioDefense will help you overcome a lot of common illnesses, which can be greatly affected by simple changes in your nutritional behavior, but with Dr. Fierro's BioDefense dietary supplement, this compound will help you battle those things such as the cold and the flu, as well as a range of other illnesses. Dr. Fierro's BioDefense can be purchased on his website at www.drarthurfierro.com. That's DrArthurFierro.com, or by calling his office here in Harrisonburg at 540-434-2495.
And that's right. Dr. Fierro, just want to point out there, he has got over 40 years under his belt in serving our area. He used to be the president of the ACBN, and that's the American Clinical Board of Nutritionists. He has a new book coming out soon, so if you're looking out for that, it's called Everything Good About Everything Bad. If you take a non-political approach about things, for example, nicotine, you know, we're told that nicotine is a bad, harmful substance, and it's going to cause cancer, and it's going to kill you. What they don't tell you are the beneficial aspects behind that. So his book goes into things like that, so definitely check that out. He also has the BioDefense book now available on Amazon, so give that a read, too, when you get a moment. We are starting our next topic now with Stoney Shiflett and J.R. Roberts, who are our returning guests. They're going to be regular guests on the show when we have shows like this, episodes like this. This is part two of We the People, and we are going to be talking about the rise of the police state. And I would like to open this topic up by reading the following from Global Research out of Canada, and it reads as follows. In the face of mass opposition, many of the over-policed state tactics of the 1950s went underground and were replaced by covert operations. Selective state violence against individuals replaced mass purges. The popular pro-democracy movement strengthened civil society, and public hearings exposed and weakened the police state apparatus, but it did not go away. However, from the early 1980s to the present, especially over the past 20 years, the police state has expanded dramatically, penetrating all aspects of civil society while arousing no sustained or even sporadic mass opposition. The question is, and this is what I'm going to pose to you guys, the question is, why has the police state grown and even exceeded the boundaries of previous periods of repression and not yet provoked any sustained mass opposition? JR, let me hear from you first.
I think one of the biggest tools used by the police state is the action of civil asset forfeiture. It's what they use to fund all of these vehicles and weapons, and they use to fund their programs. If you aren't sure what civil asset forfeiture is, I can read a definition for you. Civil asset forfeiture is a legal tool that allows law enforcement officials to seize property that they assert has been involved in certain criminal activity. But the kicker is, I want to emphasize the word assert. They do not have to prove that this stuff has been used in a crime. There are cases where a business owner gets arrested for, I don't know, selling cigarettes to an underage kid or selling alcohol to someone who's underage. And then the police come in and seize his entire savings. There is a case, I can't remember the state that it was in, but a business owner had some $200,000 taken from him because he sold something to the wrong person in his convenience store. And then he has to fight the state to prove that he is innocent to get his money back. It completely goes against the concept of innocent until proven guilty, and it's a tactic that police departments have been using to fund their little toys and fund their projects all across the country. And there are some people that are trying to fight it, but it's an uphill battle.
Now, this sounds a lot like the policing for profit problem that we have here in Virginia, where officers can seize large sums of cash without any proof that it's being used for illegal purposes just because you're carrying more than $5,000 on you. Is that right?
Absolutely. That is exactly what civil asset forfeiture is.
Okay. Now, Stoney, you've been around the block a couple of times. Don't you feel that we have seen an escalation in the police state, meaning that we have more of a no longer a protect and serve, but more of a comply or die type mentality that we're seeing with our law enforcement?
Well, to me, basically, who gets their stuff seized? Drug dealers. Plain and simple. To me, yeah, you know, the rise in police state, to me, the way I look at it is, if you're not doing nothing, why are you afraid? I do want to say
John Gear was doing nothing wrong, and he was shot by the police in his own doorway.
Who was?
John Gear out of Fairfax County. He broke no laws, complied with police, spoke with them for 30 minutes with his hands in the air, and Officer Adam Torres shot him in the stomach. He died.
We also cite the one about the gentleman
the
who was sent to pay. Go ahead. Go ahead, Stoney.
Here's the bottom line. You can make police look how you want them. Anybody could. You can go get 1,000 videos that show escalating police violence or whatever. And I agree that there is some bad seeds out there. But I can also show you 1,000 videos to where there have been some good things. Are they perfect or human? If you expect these guys to be perfect, you're going to be wrong every time. I'm sorry. I know you're supposed to follow by the rules. I get that. And when they don't check them, I get that. Step up, check them. But as far as the police arrive state, yes, I have seen a little bit. And under Obama, yeah, it scares me. I'll be honest with you, it does. But to me, in my personal life, I'm not afraid of the police at all. I mean, to me, if you're living your life like you should, and I'm not saying, they're not going to come beat my door.
That's a subjective opinion. Just because you don't have a problem with it doesn't mean the problem doesn't exist. And the idea that, yes, there's some bad apples, but they also do some good is like saying we shouldn't be mad at Hitler for killing all those Jews because he made amazing scientific progress that allowed us to have some of the luxuries we have today. That idea of trying to shrug off the bad because of a little bit of the good that they do is ridiculous. I understand some scenarios where the police come across and it's debatable on whether or not the police were in the wrong. Like the Michael Brown case,
I don't like analyzing that case because there's enough information for both sides that whatever opinion you want to make, you're going to be able to make it. There's information that Michael Brown was charging him, but there's information that the bullets were shot from above him. So there's all sorts of he said, she said, but that's one case. The John Gear case, the John Crawford case, dozens and dozens and hundreds of other cases show that the police acted horribly, violently, terrifyingly, and you're trying to brush it off by saying, I've never had any problems with my life, so obviously the rest of the country should have to deal with it. And the idea that under Obama, police are doing this or police are doing that, Obama has literally nothing to do with these things. Police have been working for years and years and years. This has been going on forever. It has nothing to do with Obama.
Yeah, but surely our president should be able to have some kind of influence over how our police are acting, because, I mean, after all, he is the commander-in-chief. But going back to what Stoney said, you know, who are the ones that are having fall victim to the forfeiture, and that's the drug dealers. And I have a problem with that statement. We had, I believe it was in 2013, it might have been in 2014, a gentleman was traveling through Virginia from New York to North Carolina where he was bringing cash to purchase two convenience stores down south, and the police did, in fact, pull him over, and it was video recorded. He did nothing wrong, and they basically told this man, you know, if you give up the money, we'll just let you go. And he didn't want to give up the money, but it was either that or they arrest him and take him to jail. Now, it ended up costing $100,000 in attorney fees to fight to get his $50,000 back. So he ended up losing out, and the man was guilty of nothing more than driving while being Indian. And so to say that who is the ones that are falling victim to this, it's just the drug dealers, that's not the case. I can tell you through firsthand experience, I was 19 working at the Taco Bell on East Market Street in Harrisonburg. In full uniform, I was taking the garbage out, and police ran up and did a stop and frisk on me, claiming that I fit the description of kids that were breaking into vehicles. But here I am in full, you know, uniform in the course of my duties. And it just, that was the first start for me to realize that we do have a overbearing police department. And that was my first sight into the rise of the police state. But the next level here is we're now seeing them with military gear. They're not dressing like police officers anymore. They're now looking a lot more like an occupying military force. Stoney,
have
what's
you guys
on your mind?
Have you seen the two camo Hummers downtown?
I have.
All right, well, first of all, I know of nobody who just has stuff taken away. Nobody. As
just
a rule,
because
though,
you don't know them doesn't mean it doesn't happen.
Well, I know. Well, what I'm saying is,
keep returning
rule,
to subjective opinions.
As a rule, the average citizen has nothing to worry about. Who in their right minds carries enough cash?
People that drop off deposits for a business, people that try to go and buy
but
a business.
But they're not the ones
people
getting
that
want to
go and buy a car that's worth more than $5,000.
But they're not the ones getting busted.
Their money to the
they're not
account.
The ones getting busted, Josh.
Yes,
they're
they
not
are.
The
he just
busted.
Told you a case that they were the ones being busted. There were two poker players that were on their way home from a tournament. They each won a couple thousand dollars, totaling their total carry to about $11,000 in there. They were pulled
so
over by the police. They found, so they say, they're professional poker players. They're world-renowned poker players. They showed their ID. They complied with every single order. They proved who they were. They had receipts for the money from the casinos. They had the money taken from them, and they still haven't gotten it back. It happened 2 years ago.
But you guys
these people complied
like
with every single order
around.
And tried to prove themselves, and it still got taken away from them.
They're probably, and I don't know that case, but again, we could point out case after case where we go back and forth. And you guys act like the police sat around just waiting. Police don't go out and just go out to do things. When they get a call, they go to a scene. What do you expect? And I don't expect them to overstep their bearings, of course. We don't, but there are times and places to where they're, you know, what's in their police histories. Look at their police histories. What's in those guys' police histories? The one that pulled those drug, card players over. Look at their police history.
If you want to take assets from someone, you need to be able to prove that it was bad. You need to be able to prove that it was involved in a criminal activity. You have the burden of proof. If you were laying a claim, the burden of proof is on you. You don't get to just say, oh, I see money there, I'm going to take it, and you have to prove to me that it's wrong. That's not how that works. That's not
no,
how freedom
I get that.
Works.
No,
I agree
with that.
I don't think
I agree
that
with
you
that,
do.
But, for the average normal citizen, though, that what you're talking about is, and I don't say let it go. Yeah, there should be something about it. You know, those guys should be held accountable if that comes out to be proved true. You know, all the cases you're giving me sounds a little fishy to me.
They sound fishy because they shouldn't be happening. They sound unbelievable because they should be unbelievable, but they're happening. Just because you don't think they should be happening doesn't mean they're not.
But it's not happening on the level you guys are actively creating organizations to go against them. I wouldn't take it that far. I do agree that there is a difference under Obama. I have seen the Baltimore thing really showed me a lot. And I'm
police have died less under Obama than any other president, including Reagan.
Yeah. I really am, worried about that.
It's the safest year in 20 years.
It's what?
This is the safest year in 20 years for police deaths. And if you want to talk about police safety, abolish the war on drugs. More police die in the war on drugs during SWAT raids than almost any other activity. And the idea of an early morning SWAT raid, the idea of police kicking in the door at 2 o'clock in the morning and accidentally shooting the dog or accidentally shooting someone, is so that they don't flush some marijuana down the toilet. That's why they do those raids. That's why those police are put in danger. If you want to worry about the safety of police, then stop doing those SWAT raids.
We should take better care of those criminals. You're right. I get it. They're breaking the law for a reason. The cops are not going to go into your house for no reason.
That's
the bottom line.
They go into the wrong house and shoot people fairly often.
Yeah, I think we remember the story of Baby Bobo where they came in and dropped a flashbang to his crib and it ended up being the wrong house, if I'm not mistaken.
When you create organizations to go against police and everything, or violence and trust in police force and society, you're making the cops more paranoid. What would I not be a paranoid state society the way Baltimore went down? If you as a policeman in Baltimore, would you not be on more high alert before the riots than after?
Absolutely, but let's ask ourselves, why did those riots happen? What triggered that? And that was that a man died at the hands of six police officers, and that was going unchecked. Now, thank goodness, Saner Heads has been prevail, and all six officers are now under federal charges for that. But that's why the riots happened in the first place, because it was, and I don't agree with it, it's not the right way to handle, hey, we're not being taken care of, our problems are not being addressed. But when you get down to the nuts and bolts, that is why they rioted. Now,
do you know how those peaceful protests actually escalated the riots? Have you heard that story?
I didn't hear you. Say that again.
Did you hear how the peaceful protests escalated into riots in Baltimore? There were about 2 or 3 days of peaceful protests in Baltimore where people took to the streets, they had their signs, they had their chants, they did everything exactly how you're supposed to do. There wasn't very much media attention, but they went out there. And they were strong. There were thousands of people.
That's not true.
Yes, it is true. I've seen videos and I know people that were there. But anyway, on
the mayor actually, let me tell you. 300,000 deaths were happening in New York City before Giuliani took over. You know how many happened last year? 300. Now, you know what he did? He went in and installed and said, I forget the actual term for it. He installed these walls in New York City to knock down a crime as far as even, what is it called? I just heard. Basically, if they suspect you of something, they could check you out. He is literally chased the crime rates out of New York City by installing those kinds of laws. 300 deaths last year in New York, considered 300,000. That's a huge difference. Now, where did they go?
You're trying to tell me that 299,700 people less people died in a year.
What's that?
You're telling me that it fell by like 30,000%
under Giuliani. Look at the statistics. 300,000 people were dying in New York City yearly. The guy before Giuliani, I don't remember who it is. And then Giuliani took over. They installed these walls where it's 300 people died last year in New York City. Look it up. It's because of people like that who's installing this. I mean, guys, in Chicago, I mean, you guys can't – it's Giuliani was taken from Chicago, and his time as mayor, I'll guarantee you the violence will go down. But in Baltimore, when you've got mayors stand back, let them loot. Are you kidding me? And you guys don't want the police to do it. The police can't do nothing about that because they aren't given authority. If they were given authority, it wouldn't be like this. That's just the bottom
okay,
line.
Okay,
they're being told.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to overstep.
You look at the crime rates before Giuliani and after. And Giuliani installed, I don't know how many programs it was, but there was one main thing he installed was
are you saying crime rate or murders?
Murders.
Okay. I'm looking at the data right
I
here.
I think it was murders. You know what?
There
have
never been 300,000 murders in New York. It is down to 2014.
Real quick, Josh, don't quote me on the murder thing. It might have been crimes. I can't remember exactly that.
Cool.
I might be mistaken on that part. But crime went down ridiculous. You don't hear about it happening in New York City. You can't tell me, and you can honestly sit there and say that the crime out of New York's happened like it was 10 years, 15 years. It's not.
All right.
And
well,
did the police,
on that note,
and did the police set the? Here's another thing. Did the police set the Baltimore fire stores and old folks' homes? And with police?
No. That was Ferguson. That was Ferguson. The way they did that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying though. And the police are there. Had I been mayor, that wouldn't have been happening. That wouldn't have been happening. I'm sorry. I mean, you know, these guys went to these guys' stores, family businesses burned. And they just stood back. Obama stood back. The mayor for Baltimore stood back. Just let it happen, man.
Yeah,
but
I remember that. I remember her going on the record and saying that she wanted to give the rioters, she called them the protesters,
True.
Their space, and they allowed it to escalate.
Exactly.
And I have to say that was a really dumbass move on behalf of the
disturbing.
Baltimore government.
It's disturbing.
Yeah.
And not only that, right there created things like that. Right there created the police. If the police don't have the mayor backing them, how would you feel?
I find it ridiculous that we can sit here and talk about how the police oppressed the citizens of a city for years and years and years. Through dozens of murders, dozens of civil asset forfeiture, dozens of cases of breaking into houses, dozens of stop and frisk on people that have done nothing wrong, and then they murder someone, and you're mad because they broke some windows in the street. Oh, my God.
No.
You,
I'm mad about
that
also.
You want these people to just hold this in? You want these people to just deal with this behavior for their entire lives?
No,
just
what I don't want...
Bullied and
what I don't want
around
them
the entire
want
time
to...
and then just deal with it. That's ridiculous.
Oh, so the answer is let's go burn down families' business.
I'm not saying
that's
the answer is to respond like that, but you can't show up to a game, you can't show up to a play after an event and then judge the reaction. You said that, I don't see if a citizen doesn't do anything wrong, then they'd have nothing to worry about the police, and then judge these people that are rioting. You've never known what it's like to be oppressed in that manner. And you're judging their responses. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, but come on, let's get real about that. Would you do that?
I'm not saying I would do that. But I've never been oppressed in that manner either.
Well, yeah, but that doesn't give you the right to go out and create law. Two wrongs don't make a right.
Yeah, but you're failing to address one of the wrongs at all.
You have
a group of people that is murdering citizens, and you have a group of citizens that are breaking buildings and setting them on fire, and you're judging the people that are breaking buildings.
What if it was the other way around? That was one incident. That was one incident.
Police kill 1,200 people a year.
They didn't even give it time. Obama already come out and said the police were guilty. He was wrong on it. A day into it, after it happened, the police were guilty. He was wrong. That's what you guys, you don't understand. You created that. You've created the first thing MSNBC done was reported. Boom, they're wrong. They're guilty. The police is wrong. And then it come out, they were totally. It's not true at all. Is the process?
Yeah,
before the prosecutor burned it down.
Have relations to the officer.
So go ahead and burn down people's businesses before let the take process through. Okay, that's it.
The officer managed to make it through the circle jerk that is police investigating themselves, and you're like, oh, look, he did nothing wrong.
Yeah, 2 days.
That's
John.
A problem there, yeah. We definitely need an independent investigation or inquiry firm that handles things like this. Having one side investigate itself, it just makes no sense. And I cannot believe that we as a nation have allowed that to go unchecked for so long. But it's definitely starting to catch the attention. I mean, you have to look at 2015. In the first six months of 2015, police were successfully able to rack up more American deaths than ISIS did in the entire time that they've been in conception. So people are starting to wake up. We need to take a quick break here, and when we come back, we're going to pick this topic up again, okay? All right. Stick around with us. We'll be back with Stoney Shiflett and J.R. Roberts. This is We the People, Part 2, and we're talking about the rise of the police state here on CIMC Music Show.
On the turning away from the pale and downtrodden and the words they say which we won't understand, don't accept that what's happening is just a case of all the suffering. Oh, you'll find that you're joining in the turning away. It's a sin that somehow light is changing to shadow and casting a shroud over. Thank you.
Alrighty, thank you for tuning in to the CIMC musician. The CIMC Music Hour. I am here with my guests Stoney Shifley and J.R. Roberts, and we are winding down the show here, talking about the rise of the police state. I've got about 2 minutes left for each of you before we have to end the segment out. So let me kick it over to Stoney real quick. Stoney, what do you have to say in closing about the rise of the police state?
Okay. I appreciate the topic, guys, for not taking time. It was a great place. I respect it all. It was creating things like Spotify and other things like that. To me, it doesn't promote. It promotes distrust, and I get why you create everything, but it might be more constructive to make cell phones, cell pops, work for us, or something like that. I think once kids start seeing things like that, it gives distrust between them and the police. We need to work with the local police and everything. Learn how we can all say. I know they're not perfect, and there is that point. I agree with you. And you know when that happens, you get yelled at. It's people get it. That's what the system do it too. That's what it's there for. But we gotta stop. We gotta stop placing distrust between us. We got to start with them and say, hey, what can we do about this? And I get y'all and you're sad. And again, I respect y'all for the time. Thanks.
All right. Well, thank you for your inputs there. JR, what would you have to say in closing? We got about 2 minutes.
As far as the assertion that crime rates dropped when the mayor of New York instituted several programs, I found something that countered that. It's the Donahue and Levitt study. And they asserted that males between the age of 18 and 24 are the most likely to commit crimes, and that's kind of common knowledge. And as well, people from lower-income homes are more likely to commit crimes. And in the Roe v. Wade decision in 1973, abortion was made more widely legal. And I'm not trying to say anything about my opinion of abortion. It's just an objective analysis of some data here. And it says, Donahue and Levitt suggest that the absence of unwanted children following legalization in 1973 led to a reduction in crime 18 years later, starting in 1992 and dropping sharply in 1995. These would have been peak crime-committing years for those unborn children. So while I'm not saying that's the sole reason crime dropped, it's another sort of area or angle that could be a reason why the crime dropped, not so much as the institution of police programs. And when you say that community projects and groups such as Spotted Cop create mistrust with the police department, I think you're missing the fact that those programs and communities are made because of the mistrust of the police department. They don't create it. They're spawned because of it. There's a mistrust with the police because they police for profit by catching speeders instead of catching criminals. So these sort of groups and communities are created to avoid those things. And things like Spotted Cop is really the foothold of a volunteerist society, the idea that the community really can police itself, and we don't need some third party to rule like the king's violent hand. We have a Spotted Cop board that helps people find stolen goods, that helps people come together and help people who are in tragedy, such as Heather with her house fire. And these sort of things bring the community together, and if you're suggesting that they're a negative thing for the area, then I don't know exactly where you're getting that sort of opinion.
Excellent points. Both of you gentlemen, I really enjoyed having you on the show tonight. I would just like to express my gratitude once again. We covered a lot of ground here tonight, and at some point it got even pretty deep, and that's what we need. We need to be open-minded, and we need to come together. Even if we're not in agreement, we need to be able to voice what's on our minds and weigh out the different options and you know, the different things that are happening in our community. I would like to say thank you very much from all of us here at the show. You guys didn't have to spend the last 90 minutes of your time and 60 minutes the other day. So a big thank you for that. I do notice here that we were going to do another few moments with Heather Lamb about her home fire, but unfortunately she's unable to call back in. So I want to go ahead and just take a moment and reiterate what happened with her. Her house was set up to fire by arsonists, and this was a fire that consumed everything that they owned. It also took the life of one of their household pets. If you have any information as to what had happened, let me see real quick. I'm going to try to pull up the information about that. I believe it happened on, well, let's see here. I have it right here. Apparently, the fire took place, I'm finding it, August 5th. Yeah, back on August 5th, and they heard a couple of male teens speaking loudly, and a couple of bangs were heard, and then the house was set to fire, and the car was heard speeding away. If you have any information, please get with them. I have some contact information for you. They are without anything. They're homeless right now. So if you have any donations you want to send in or any material donations, please send it to them. And let me get the address for you. That address is, I believe it's 2123. There it is. 2123 Doble Hollow Road in Stanley, Virginia. And let's see here. We've got about 4 minutes left. I'd like to turn over. We have 3 minutes and 50 seconds. Let's give half that to Stoney real quick. Stoney, do you have anything to say in closing before we sign out here?
Yeah, sure. Thank you, guys. You know, before I get back, don't get pretty strong. Just that neat shows like this will help.
All right. It sounded like you were dropping out a little bit there. Hopefully that's just my reception on my end here. JR, do you have anything that you'd like to say before we sign off? JR, are you with us?
Sorry.
All righty. Well,
I had my mic.
Oh, no problem.
Me,
okay. Okay.
I think I was able to piece a little bit of what Tony was saying there. He said that shows and programs like this help to bring in a larger analysis of what's going on, and you get to hear both sides and hear it both hashed out, and it helps people create a more educated opinion. And I think that's what he was saying. But anyway, that's what I've taken away from shows like this. And I appreciate you guys having me. I appreciate talking to you, Stoney. You had a good time. And
absolutely.
I want to say one last thing to Heather and her family. God bless you guys. I hope you can get out of this.
Yeah, absolutely.
On a positive note.
All right. I want to pay a quick tribute to our sponsors. Activist Unchained is a website for people who want to make a change in their community. They come together. It's a central hub. You can check them out at activistunchained.hostoi.com. Comstar Computers, www.comstarcomputers.com, having a electronic gadget sale. Check them out. WhatToDoFamRadio.com. That's where John the Real McCoy has his show, and he's helped us get started here. Of course, the fellas at Spotacop. JR at one point was on the Spotacop team too. I do want to put a special note out there about the Northern Virginia Cop Block. A lot of good work being done there. All together, I think we had a good show tonight. Tune in on our next show. We're going to be talking a little bit about, we have a person over in Moorefield, West Virginia, who makes her living as a sketch artist. So we'll talk a little bit about that, have some more good music from local talent, and we'll be bringing you a little bit more news from the Spotacop and local alerts. So thank you once again for joining in. Special thanks to Stoney Shiflett and J.R. Roberts for joining us on We the People Part 2. Thank you for lending your comments and helping us out. Thanks for spreading the word. And, guys, remember to reach out to Heather and her family for that house fire. This show is going to be on archive. You can check it out at blogtalkradio.com/CIMC. This is your host, Jason Cuban, and I thank you once again for joining us for the show.